It is a Wednesday edition. It might as well be the holidays. I think we're kind of in that mode. Frank Sennett will be here a little bit later to talk about what's going on at Crane Chicago Business. Frank is the digital strategy, the director of digital strategy there. And one of the things he's going to talk about is a new nap room that just not too far from here on South Michigan Avenue.
A what?
A nap room where you can rent a 30-minute cot and take a nap. Come on, you couldn't use an afternoon nap?
I wouldn't walk a block to get one, though. I'd fall over my chair.
Well, this is, I don't know how much they cost, but I'm sure Frank's checked it out, so we'll talk to him. That's the voice of Terry Savage, who joins us most Wednesdays to talk about the markets. Terry, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Very happy to be here as we charge into the holiday shopping season.
All right, I saw a statistic that says the Wednesday and Friday before and after Thanksgiving, the S&P 500, the last 34 of 35 years have been up.
In the market. Yeah, everybody goes home early. Everybody's evening up their positions. Actually happens the Dow's down 65 points now. But you never can tell because we have a couple hours more to go. But all the traders are moving out of New York early to avoid the traffic. Ditto Chicago.
Do you look at a number like that today? Does it matter? I mean, the volume's got to be incredibly light, right?
No, it doesn't matter.
Right.
I mean, it really doesn't
matter. So why the
matter.
Heck are you
look
here
we
anyway?
Are.
What are you
We're
doing
here? We're at 23,500 plus. And a year ago, that would have been a really delightful Christmas present to predict. I always keep remembering our Dr. Bob Frelick, who will be joining us again in the annual Executives Club Economic Forecast, proclaiming that the year ahead, which will be this next January, it happens again on the 17th, executivesclubofchicago.org for tickets. And he proclaimed 22,222, which was so shocking. We were, way below that. And he said, that way you'll remember it. And look, we've exceeded
it. Wow, that's pretty amazing.
So I know we were not thinking this was happening.
What other markets are you looking at? You talk about Bitcoins today?
Yeah, I'm looking at Bitcoin.
You want to give us 30 seconds on what a Bitcoin is?
Yeah.
Can you do it in 30?
Yeah, I can do it.
Okay.
Using a computer ledger that is virtually uncrackable, it's a mechanism for creating transactions and valuing them. Now, Bitcoin is just a coin that uses this blockchain ledger, but you can transfer your euros or yen or Chinese renminbi or dollars into Bitcoin. We keep measuring it in dollars, and it's gone up from like about $800, I would bet, a year ago to I think we're at $8,200
but
today.
So Bitcoins are not their currency, but they're not based
on...
You
can't hold on to it.
And
you
yet
have
you
to
can...
go to a place, a secure place, secure being the word, that hosts your wallet, which is the place where you change your dollars into Bitcoin. Now, two risks. The first is a risk you buy Bitcoin at $8,200 and everybody says, wait a minute, or there's a fraud somehow involved and they don't want to be in Bitcoin. And the second is the price falls. So you have some risks, but it's been a spectacular, interesting market. And the technology behind it, the blockchain ledger, is going to transform banking for sure in the next 5 years.
Okay, but I thought when it first started out, it was kind of hinky.
There are other coins, by the way. There's Ripple and Ethereum. There are a bunch of coins.
But wasn't Bitcoin a little hinky at the outset?
Well, what happened is
they didn't know who came up with it.
Virtual wallets in the entry level, these are the nodes that let you enter into that world, were not secure. And there was a lot of that. And I think that's probably the weak spot of the entire Bitcoin idea. But the concept of recording transactions, and do you remember that 20 years ago, because I did a story on TV, the helicopters would come with your checks and land at the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago, and they would literally process paper checks. Well, everything's done online now. I mean, there are no helicopters transporting data checks and no data processing offices. That was the first giant wave of technology to transform bank transactions. Now the question is, why should you have to wait? I deposited a check this morning. I got $200 immediately. I didn't need it. I mean, that's in my account. And tomorrow I would get the balance of that check. Hey, come on. Bitcoin makes an instant transaction possible. That's why banking will use it.
And so it will happen.
We'll use blockchain, not Bitcoin, by
right.
the way.
Okay. So in Bitcoin is one of the mechanisms
is
that uses
the ways
blockchain
to
technology.
Get in, that uses the blockchain technology, right. And the run-up, now many have likened it, the run-up from $700 per Bitcoin about a year ago to $8,200 today is like the tulip bulb mania. But the fact is, the price may come down, but the concept will remain. So before you laugh at it, as Jamie Dimon famously did.
Who's
his
in
own
town
bank.
Today, by the way?
He's in town, right? Yeah. Before you laugh at it, his own bank is working on. And by the way, full disclosure: I'm on the board of directors of CME Group.
And they've
Chicago
just started
Mercantile
a futures
Exchange.
Index.
In December, it's expected we will launch a Bitcoin futures, a cash settled.
Okay, but wait, well, you're getting
contract.
Way ahead of me here because I understand that. So this is
so
the
this
way
is
you can
so...
do it. But wait, but so what is it that is going up? So if this is the technology,
what if I want to switch? Let me give you this. If I want to switch my money into gold, you know, a couple of days ago, looking at where gold is now, but if I wanted to switch my money into gold, I can walk into a store downtown and buy U.S. $20 gold coins or bullion coins that are just not even any value of collector's value, and I can buy gold. And then I have to think about where am I going to put them in a bank vault? Am I going to, you know, bury them in the backyard? So Bitcoin is sort of like that. You never touch the gold. Okay, it's immutable like gold is, which is why it stood the test of time over the years. And it can be used for transactions. We don't use gold. We use paper currencies,
so,
the dollar.
So it's not a currency, but it can be traded like a currency.
It is a currency because people in because it's private. It's out of the eyes of government.
Okay, so because it's private, then what are the people investing in? That's my question. They're not buying...
Well, it's not like you're going to take delivery of Bitcoin.
Right.
There's not
so
a Bitcoin
buying,
that you
so
can
they buying
in your
against
pocket.
The like the future index
no,
of it or the
Oh well, the price of it, the demand for Bitcoin. There's a limited number of Bitcoins as one currency, Ripple, Ethereum, and there've been some Bitcoin splits like Bitcoin Cash and Bitcoin Gold. It gets very complicated. I've been following this for the last 2 years. But there's a limited number of coins that can be mined. The limit of the mining is I think I'm trying to remember, it's 21 million. Those coins are processed by what they call miners using very high-speed computers, mostly
oh,
in China.
Oh, yeah, we have talked about this
yeah,
before.
So it's very limited amount of this commodity. You know, it's
it's funny to
a
me
willing
because,
suspension of disbelief.
Exactly, because they're using...
I actually would prefer gold.
because you're using physical terms to describe something that doesn't have a physical presence. So you're talking about the wallet, or you're talking about mining it.
Yes.
You know, none of that
and
is really happening.
And those are physical terms, and there are no real coins.
It's like
but
a Dungeons
point,
and Dragons game,
but
sort of.
But as more and more people come to accept it, I've seen ads now that you can pay your rent in Bitcoin in New York, or there was a realtor selling condos in Bitcoin. There are auto dealers that have announced that they'll accept Bitcoin. Because think about it. If you sold a car for Chevy something or other for $40,000, and the person paid in Bitcoin... a few months ago, and you kept the Bitcoin, you not only made your profit as the dealer on the car, but on the currency itself, because Bitcoin's up a couple thousand dollars. Now, what do you spend? You're the car dealer. You took $40,000 worth of Bitcoin. Now it's worth $60,000. Really? Okay, now what are you going to buy with it? So as more and more people decide they'd rather have Bitcoin than cash, which could or dollar transactions, or renminbi transactions in China, then there's a whole global market that will come to accept Bitcoin as much as they accept dollars,
so
and that's likely to happen.
We're almost out of time, but so for this segment.
Yeah.
Okay. So do you foresee that the Bitcoin will eventually replace national currencies, that it will be, or that it will be used relatively equally alongside?
Will yeah, it be used? We've always had sovereign currencies that are protected and valued because of the laws of that nation. Now, let me give you a thought that'll bend your mind over the holiday. So what makes a sovereign? We know what gold makes gold valuable. It's also hard to lug around, and it's hard to divide, and you don't cut it in half. But what makes the dollar valuable has always been the laws, the respect, the strength of the economy of the United States. When the world went off the gold standard and went on the dollar standard, it was and years before that, it was on the British currency. It's because of the might of our nation in the world. Well, look at what's going on in Washington. If you lose value, if you lose respect for the United States economically, politically, militarily, it's easy to see that the dollar itself could lose some respect, and Bitcoin might stand there in an era of technology. Bitcoin and other currencies based on blockchain ledger might in fact throw out the U.S. dollar as the standard if our nation isn't the king of the world anymore.
All right, that's Terry Savage. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, she's going to explain to you why you should tell your high school kids to study the bowl of mashed potatoes.
No, this is free money. Please pay attention.
Because the more you learn about mashed potatoes, you write about a potato scholarship.
No, but I'm going to show you how to get free money. I mean, big free money, like $10,000 a year for your kids to pay for your kids' college. And it all goes begging.
Would you stop? I've got to go here. We've got to get going. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Terry Savage is in the studio. Okay, so I always steer people to terrysavage.com, where you've got your columns. And the most recent one is about finding scholarships, right? Free money for college students.
Exactly. And your kids are going to come home and think they've got a free weekend to watch football and sit around on a couch all weekend this weekend. My advice, two websites. They're in this article at terrysavage.com. FastWeb, FASTWEB.com, and scholarships.com. Go there. Fill out the questionnaires. It's free. They're not selling this stuff in the sense that you have to worry about it. It's a lot of information about your background, your ethnicity, race, religion. All these play a part. You can now you can discriminate in awarding scholarships. If you live in Chicago and your name is Zolp and you're Catholic and you go to Loyola, there's money waiting for you.
Z-O-L-P.
Yeah, but right. There's more good stuff. There's a lot of stuff that's very broad-based that doesn't all get given out, but for the year, these programs are given out in January and February, so you want to start applying now. There are a couple of scholarships that are really fabulous. I always talk about the one where you make your prom dress out of duct tape.
Right.
Yeah, it's worth $10,000.
No, do the National Potato Scholarship. That's
okay.
My favorite.
The National Potato Scholarship is $10,000 for a graduate school with a strong interest in research that can benefit the potato industry. See, the point is you fill out this questionnaire, they do the search for you. So if your father was in Rotary or your mother was a Rotarian, things like that, if your family name is unusual, they will search and tell you all the scholarships you might qualify for. Now, look, don't just have high school seniors do this. You've got a sophomore or a junior. You can apply for these scholarships and write these essays that are required or build up your civic accomplishments to qualify in your senior year. And if you win it as a junior, they'll hold it for you. There are fabulous, the John F. Kennedy Profiles Encourage Scholarship.
So wait a minute, though. So I read this column. I read this column carefully.
Yep.
And I understand all that, search and get the potential scholarships and things like that. If you see one that requires you to volunteer certain hours and you're a sophomore, start volunteering.
Exactly.
Here's the thing, Terry. In this column, you recommend that early high school kids practice writing their essays.
Okay, so watch this. If you're an African-American student, you could win $10,000 a year for 4 years for a scholarship if by writing a 1,000-word essay. Then you see the details and you have to have citations. But I mean, wouldn't it be worth it? You're learning that stuff in school anyway. The profiles encourage. Listen to the qualifications for that. It's a 750 to 1,000 word creative essay that, quote, demonstrates an understanding of political courage as described by John F. Kennedy in Profiles in Courage.
I know, but
$10,000. The deadline's January 4th.
But the Lions play first and then the Cowboys play on Thanksgiving.
I don't think we're going to be working on it. Look what's going on in Washington.
No one's going to be writing essays. Practice essays.
I'd practice an essay for $10,000 free money for college, and the deadline is January 4th. Please, your kids won't go to my Read My Column. Parents, please go to terrysavage.com. See the links to fastweb.com and scholarships.com. Fill out all the details. Don't worry about it being insecure if they're not asking for your credit card or anything like that. It's free. They'll search for the scholarships you might qualify for, and then you go through them one by one.
You know, honey, I'm teasing you.
This. Sit down and write an essay about being a good citizen or global warming or something like that.
No kid wants to hear that, though, that they have to practice
their
essays.
Well, they wanted the money to go to college, though.
I agree. Okay, right. I'm just teasing you.
Are you going to do that with your daughter?
My daughter's almost done, but my son's got a couple. So I'll do it, and I'll report back to you.
All right, absolutely. Next week, by the way, holiday gifts for kids, money gifts for kids.
Oh, I love this one. You're cooking tomorrow?
I am making a 24-pound turkey. It is sitting in the roaster as we talk.
Now, are you a briner, a deep fryer? What's your secret?
No, I'm doing my mother's recipe. I'm the only one that will keep on doing that. And my famous apple pie. I've already made two of them.
Really?
Yes.
Well, have a great holiday, Terry.
You're invited if you're stuck here.
You're just saying that because you know I'm going somewhere else.
Oh, okay. Yeah, right.
Well, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Frank Sennett is here from Crane Chicago Business, the Director of Digital Strategy. And I would imagine his strategy right now is to find a table with the turkey on it tomorrow afternoon. Frank Sennett, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
That's right. And you're always pushing my buttons. Now I'm hungry.
Are you working today?
Yeah. If this can be called working.
Well, it's we're living the dream each and every day. A couple of stories I want to talk to you about. One by Albie Gallum, which is, you know, I feel like we've been preparing for this story for a while. But Albie wrote about the fact that now apartment building owners are, well, they're not giving away their downtown apartments, but they're throwing all kinds of incentives at renters because of the glut. And the glut's only going to get worse.
Yeah, it's funny. The whole time that you and I have been talking on Wednesdays, it has been, okay, we're going from condos to converting to apartments, and when's it going to happen? When's it going to happen? And you're right, the roller coaster's over the hill. There's a glut right now. It's not helped by the fact that this is a slow season, you know, heading into winter. It's harder to rent in general, but yeah, there's great deals for renters downtown right now because they're having to offer a bunch of incentives. The old standby apartment towers are competing with all the new ones coming online. We have 4,500, a record 4,500 new downtown apartments this year, and there's going to be another 3,500 next year and as many as 5,000 in 2019. So it's not going to let up anytime soon unless maybe Amazon comes in and they need to rent out a bunch of apartments.
You know, I was talking to a friend of mine this weekend who moved last weekend. I said, what's the deal? You moved? He goes, yeah. He said, you know, we were on the fifth floor of our building, and there was someone who was smoking on the floor, and it was bothering my girlfriend. And so we were complaining. And finally, they just came to us, and they gave us an apartment with an extra bedroom. It's usually $800 more. I think they gave it to him for just a couple of hundred dollars more. And they just said, here, take it. And at the time, I thought, wow, that was kind of weird. Having read the story, I wonder if they just know that one bedroom or two bedrooms are easier to rent than three bedrooms. And so in a way, they took the albatross off the market and made available a more rentable unit on the fifth floor.
Yeah, that actually sounds like probably what happened. I mean, we're looking at absorption, they say. Every year, the number of new units that can be absorbed into the system is about 2,900 units this year and about 3,000 each year in the next two. And so supply growth is going to exceed demand by 4,100 units in those 3 years. So there's going to be plenty of those albatrosses flying around.
I love the fact, though, they write about some of the incentives that they're giving. Well, first of all, I want to talk about how the rent has increased. So from 2009 to 2016, the average net rent at top-tier or Class A downtown apartments went up 46%. Okay, that's in the economic crisis and the recovery, right? That's when people were renting, not buying. That's what fueled the whole apartment thing. So the cost for these apartments already, it has got to be hugely inflated, too. That's got to be a problem they're facing.
Yeah, so right now, the average Class A net rent declined this year only about 3% from a year earlier. So right now, what they're trying to do is offer, like you say, these fun incentives that you wanted to talk about before they really start dropping the prices. But yeah, I think there's going to definitely be price pressure in the next couple of years.
There's one apartment building that actually has kind of a wheel of fortune where you spin a wheel to get cash back.
Yeah, I mean, this is the people are getting creative because when you've got a glut in the market, you've got to catch people's eyes however you can. And, you know, we've always seen that first month free, that kind of incentive.
Right.
But yeah, so spin the wheel. I don't know if Van is going to be there to turn the letters, but we can always hope.
Up to $1,500 off. And so some of these apartments, too, are offering not just 1 month, but 2 months free. And then I don't know if it's the same buildings or others that are offering brokers who bring in tenants as many as 2 months payment for bringing in. So that means you could have some, I don't know if they're the same building, Frank, but I mean, the building owner could be giving away 4 months rent there just to get a tenant in. That seems pretty dramatic.
Yeah, part of it goes to the agent, part of it too. And this is the thing in New York now, you know, in Manhattan, when you get an apartment, you pay these broker's fees just to get to rent an apartment, which is something you've been able to avoid in Chicago. But as you say, you know, it's the reverse that's happening now. They're actually paying these agents to bring people in. And, you know, it could be 3-4 months, but think about it as compared to an open apartment.
Steve Daniels has a story about State Farm Insurance and the fact that they are hiking the insurance rates for homeowners, not just homes, but condos as well. I think coming up in February, 3.9% increase for homes and 6.2% for condos. Is that because of all of the costs for the hurricanes, or what's behind that?
Yeah, they're saying that hurricanes along the Atlantic and Gulf Coast, they have really racked up the bills. But here's one that maybe you didn't think of. They recently reported, Allstate, one insurance company, just recently reported $460 million in losses from the California wildfires just in October.
Wow.
So, you know, we saw wine country going up in smoke, and we saw Southern California. And so the fires and the hurricanes are really hitting the bottom line, and so they're raising rates across the country, all of the insurers.
Before time gets away from us, I promised the good people at Peace Power Napping that we would talk for a few minutes to help people snooze a little bit at 30... Wait, this is just across the street from you, 30 North Michigan Avenue. It's a new napping studio?
Yeah, so Peace Power Napping, 30 North Michigan, and you know, just down the block from me. I think I better check it out after a big lunch, maybe. They have little cots separated by white hanging curtains. For $20. You get 30 minutes of a nap, and you know, I don't know if it doesn't look from the picture like there's a lot of privacy. So hopefully,
bring
my CPAP machine, I might be snoring and waking everybody up there.
So you go in a room and there're like white curtains around you, and you're on a cot. So, I mean, in these hypersensitive days, I just don't think that's going to go over. But do they do it in New York, or has it been successful elsewhere?
Yeah, I mean, apparently it's a new trend that's spreading around, and even here in Chicago, the Chicago Board of Trade building has a yoga studio with nap hours that opened in 2015. So, you know, it is something that has made a toehold here. But yeah, there's a lot of questions in my mind as far as how much peace of mind can you get if I'm next to you with one sheet separating
right.
us, snoring away.
Oh, you know, you go check in, you got some hinky guy checking you in. I don't know. It'd be kind of hard to get my eyes closed, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. If Charlie Rose is booked in for a nap, stay away.
Well, there's no better time to end it than right now. Frank Sennett, thanks a lot.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, Fred. We are just hours away from our Thanksgiving holiday gathering around the table with family and friends and all of that. And then we'll get back to the work week next week when things return to normal. And when they do, okay, so if you listen to me regularly, you know that I, in addition to working here, I have my own small business, SteveBertrandTravel.com. And it creates group trips for businesses or big families or charities, things like that, to Europe. One of the things I know I need to do is to figure out how to advertise better on Facebook and social media and things such as that. I'm not sure I'm up to it. Michael Steckler is the chief revenue officer of Social Code, and he joins us on a phone line to maybe walk us through some of the introductory steps to teach people how to do what's what. Michael, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hi, Steve. Pleasure to join you.
I'm glad you're here, and happy Thanksgiving ahead of time. I'll say that now. Okay, so I got a little business. I know I need to increase my Facebook presence or advertising. I know that they say they're always asking me to boost posts or to do different things, but I kind of am afraid to throw money after something that I don't really understand. What is it that small business owners or people with groups that they want to grow should understand about advertising on Facebook?
So I think there's a couple of things I would talk to where we've seen success. I think one area is really understanding the audiences and people that you think should buy your product. And ideally, maybe you already have some data around the audiences that have previously bought your product. I think one of the things that Facebook offers is this really hyper level of targeting. And it's sort of one of the first times that small companies outside of, when I think back a few years and Google and search, can really use much smaller budgets to great effect against these sort of hyper-targeted groups of people. So at one level, really understanding who should buy your products, who's bought your products historically, and then seeing what the sort of commonalities in that data tell you, and trying to then target those people or similar people across Facebook.
All right, so then when Facebook asks me, tells me, oh, you know, this post is performing 73% better than your others, do you want to boost it? I mean, is that something, that's not an automatic yes, you're saying?
I think in those instances where the Facebook algorithm, I mean, what they have a real in-depth understanding of is really the sort of people that are viewing your posts and connecting with that, but also more broadly, other people within their sort of social network on Facebook that are likely to interact with that post. So in some instances, I think we very much take the mentality of test, 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 but then really dig into what the data is telling you and the numbers that you see and where it's working, double down on those areas of investment. Second area I'd really talk to is around content. I think one of the great opportunities that as an industry we don't talk enough about is that the barrier to entry to producing great content, and I'll talk very specifically here about video. I think in, you know, 15, 20 years ago, video was very much seen as a very high-end, expensive thing to produce, very much geared towards television. Nowadays, actually, the ability to produce much lower cost video-based advertising or content is considerably easier. So I think there's a really great opportunity for small businesses to produce that type of content, you know, and again use that against those types of groups of people.
It's funny you say that because my daughter just got home from college yesterday, and she makes these just beautiful, wonderful, you know, 60, 90-second films out of stills or clips of video or anything like that. And I said, look, I need you to do one of those for me. I need film or video like that to help get the message out. And so that in a Facebook post or in a Facebook ad would serve me better than just language.
Completely. And I think when you think about, I'm sure your daughter's probably a heavy user of Instagram.
Right.
Yeah, that's another Facebook platform where actually the sort of visual-based content is even more important, and that's how that sort of business was really built. When you think about Instagram users, you know, 80% of Instagram users are following some form of business. So there's a real opportunity there to engage at a kind of organic, outside of paid advertising level, but then really reinforce that message with paid for advertising against those groups of people, just to really grow your audience, your reach, and sort of end result of performance.
Michael, you do.
Yeah, we're
go ahead.
Sorry, carry on.
I was just going to say.
I think
no, you go.
I was just going to finish on that. I think the content thing is, you know, there are, we've built a sort of smart content business. We call it smart content, which I think is a kind of in a way is a higher level sort of description of what you've just described there around having a group of very talented, creative people that understand these platforms. That's the only thing I would just say is it's worth working with people that really understand. And they sometimes are the users of the platforms, which is why I mentioned Instagram in relation to your daughter, is having those people that really understand those platforms in detail, understand the formats that are available, because it is pretty complex. And for a small business to try and understand all the different variants of vertical video versus horizontal video and what should I produce can be fairly complex. So I think understanding the formats you have and the audiences you're trying to reach and how that differs across those two platforms is important.
And that's funny, Michael. Honest to God, that was the same question I was going to ask you, whether we can do it ourselves or whether it pays to hire someone to work with us. Now, clearly that's what you do, so I would understand why you would advocate for that. But where do people find more information then about this smart content?
So we work across a number of large companies like Capital One, Visa, Michael Kors, Nestle, very big brands. But we also work with smaller disruptive companies. I call them disruptive, but companies that are growing very quickly. A larger example would be someone like Hickey's, who we work with. And we learn a lot from those types of companies because they're trying new things. And in many instances, they're actually building their business off the back of these platforms. So, 10 years ago, lots of great companies were built off the back of Google search and being the first companies to really understand how those platforms worked. So I think in some instances, small businesses, there's tons of great resource on Facebook and other areas about how to do Facebook advertising better. I think if you're really serious about it, it is definitely worth partnering. I mean, clearly I'm biased, but partnering with companies that have both proprietary technology, but also teams of people that are really embedded in these platforms and understand the audiences, understand all the ad sets that are available, and probably more importantly, understand when to test new features and sort of do that testing on behalf of their advertiser base and then decide whether that's appropriate for smaller advertisers or larger advertisers that they work with in their portfolio. So, I think it's important that you sort of ask your providers that you might work with a couple of key questions. One is, like, can they produce content and how regularly can they produce content? So the freshness of the content is really important. Mm-hmm. It's not the days of producing a 30-second TV spot, hoping it works, and then having this high-cost, repeatable model.
You know what,
Mike, producing lots of.
I'm interrupting you because I'm sorry. I appreciate your help on this, but we're flat out of time. I need to make a run.
Okay, great.
Michael Steckler, listen, you helped a lot. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving.